Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Body is back. Body's got some great stuff on his website at bodynodge.com. That's BOTINAGY.com. Some great article, about Mitch Creek's return to Adelaide after being in the NBA. We do a big inquisition into kind and sensitive inquiries. We also talk about Casper Ware going to Sydney, Melo Trimble and Sean Long going to Melbourne United, Tom Jervis, Sean Bruce, Craig Moller, Adnam, Pinar. We touch on all that stuff. We also look at who's still on the board from Nate Jawa and Cameron Besto and others. And then we go into a deep dissection of Lennon Cooper's wonderful documentary, Titletown. I've been banging on about it all week. I'll have the link to it on YouTube on my Twitter account, NBL Pocket Pod. An absolute must-watch for any Sixers fan or NBL fan or any fan of sports documentaries in general. This one's a brilliant piece of storytelling in sports. Definitely worth listening to and watching. Guys, I hope you enjoy this episode. And as always, like and subscribe. And if you have any questions or anything, by all means, hit me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Thanks very much. Bye.
Daddy.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
Extraordinary. Thank you for your kind inquiry. How are you traveling?
I'm very well. How was your break?
It's been good, but you know, I'm not sure that I'm having that big of a break.
Right, yeah. I was about to quickly say, your sort of little catchphrase to being asked how you are, kind and sensitive inquiry, is that yours or is that from somewhere?
No, that's from my brain.
It's from your brain. It's got a very sort of faulty towers in a nice way. You know, you see something.
I know.
You're seeing that sort of stuff.
People are not very sure how to take that. Now, I used to find the same thing in the lifts at work when I was working at the newspaper, that people would get in and go, how you doing today? And people would say, dollar, another day, another dollar, and all those sorts of kind of cliched responses. And I decided long ago, actually, when I first started writing, that I wouldn't do cliches. I would invent my own stuff. So, you know, instead of...
kind and sensitive inquiry.
Yeah, and so, yeah, on the lift I'd always say, I'm soaring with the Panamanian condors. I'm not sure how high a condor soars. Yeah, I'm not sure about condors, or if they even have them in Panama, but it just kind of popped into my head one day and I blurted that out. Well, that's a standard one for me too.
I do like it because, hey, how are you, has become such a arbitrary thing to say nowadays. It's just part of the thing to say. So to then comment on someone on it being a kind and sensitive inquiry, which it should be, makes total sense. And it threw me off at first, but now I've come to like it. And I hate to say, I don't know whether good or bad, I have used it myself in my private life.
Yeah, because it's a fun response, actually. It really is. Yeah, and there's you get a nice reaction from the other person too, because they're either concerned whether you're having a bit of a piss take at their expense, or amused by how you reacted. So it's a winner on all fronts. I like it.
The good thing is when you go, oh, I'm very well. Long pause, and then you go, and by the way, thank you for that kind and sensitive inquiry. And then that normally really that. Yeah, try that in your spare time. That's a lot of fun. Anyway, let's quickly jump to the NBL. So, obviously, biggest signing, we'll do the most recent one, Trimble and Long to Melbourne.
Yeah, that's huge. It's huge, but I love the way fans are so passionate about their teams. Let's go back 12 months before we address what you've just said. Go back 12 months and when the signing of Bogut, the retention of Randall, the signing of Kickett, the retention of Lish and Newley at Sydney Kings, and the Sydney Kings were being touted, and you'll remember this as the greatest team of all time. Yeah. It's like win something. And now we've got Melbourne. Oh, we've added Sean Long, we've added Melo Trimble. Don't even bother showing up for the regular season. Just go straight to the playoffs. It's a nonsense.
And it's unbelievable. And people said the same thing about when Ware went to Sydney. We'll talk about that in a second. But with Long and Trimble, what I find funny is, and I like to judge things on what's going to happen, on what has happened, or at least one of the things.
Yeah.
I mean,
evidence.
Taking the two best players from two teams, that one that finished dead last and by a long way, and another that finished, I think, second last.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. So they're good players. But, you know, I like to measure people on what they've done. And just defensively, I worry about this team. I don't know what's going to happen.
Sure. Because, with all due respect to Chris Goulding, as wonderful a player as he is, the first thing you think of when you think of Chris isn't his great defensive play.
Yeah, exactly.
So you start going through and you go, Mello, yeah, was he a great defender? You know, so, like, it's an interesting, very interesting scenario. It's a good team. I love what they're putting together.
It's going to be super fun.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And purpose-built to go up against Sydney as well, but in a different fashion. A lot of people were telling me that, they're going to have to find a lot of defense at the centre spot because of a Bogut. And I think, well, maybe you could just run him over and just outscore Bogut. And, I mean, Long is a guy who's capable of it.
Yes. Yeah, those Bogut-Long encounters during the last regular season were one of those individual matchups that we were all looking forward to every time they were coming up, as we were with Bogut and Boone when he was the man at Melbourne. So I think Melbourne has definitely upgraded. With all due respect to Josh Boone, we had the better part of three seasons from him. Yeah. The middle one was the best. Obviously, the first one, when he came in late, he showed what he could do. Then they brought him back, he proved what he could do, and then I thought last season the game caught up to him and maybe passed him by.
Yeah, I think so. Looking at it with him, did you see sort of his response to the Long sign?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, oh, I think he's jumped the gun there, and I was like, no, I don't think so. I mean, they were trepidatious about bringing him back for this season.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't think he jumped the gun there, but what do you think?
I did think, though, in what he said, that there was an element there of sadness that United hadn't really reached out to him in any way. I mean, and you're not obliged to. I'm not holding United to any particular standard that other clubs don't meet by saying, you know, well, they should have this, they should have done. No, they're not bringing the guy back. You part on good terms, he leaves you. You're not required to say, hey, by the way, now where you played, we're putting Sean Long. But it would have been nice.
Yeah.
If Melbourne had just sort of said, listen, by the way, thanks very much for all you did for us over that period of time. We are moving in a different direction, but we really appreciated what you did, and you'll always be fondly recalled as a star with this club.
You don't suppose, do they do exit interviews where maybe Melbourne gave the opposite impression?
Well, that's possible, but given his... Yeah, I was going to say, given his the manner in which he spoke of Dean Vickerman, then I don't think if Dean had given him an exit interview that indicated he was coming back, I don't think his sentiment would have been quite as generous.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yep.
I mean, this team now has that third import spot open. Does it bode well for DJ Kennedy? Like, he's now that sort of switchy defensive four, can do a little bit of things, doesn't necessarily need the ball. Does it go better for him being re-signed there or inconsequential?
Well, where did you think they struggled last season? Because I thought David Barlow had a wonderful season. I think we've discussed this before.
Yep.
For me, he was most improved.
Yep.
But what he brought to the four spot wasn't what Ty Wesley had given them. And what Ty Wesley had given them was obviously better because they won a championship. So was the problem in the three or was the problem in the four?
Mm.
Because in the three, you know, there were many times that Vickerman went with where McCarron and Goulding in the one sort of, you know, in that, using the three of them together. I know he brought Goulding off the bench, but there were occasions when he ran so you sort of go, well, where were they more susceptible, in the four or the three? So when you come up with the answer to that, then you come up with the answer to what they've got to recruit.
Yeah, I think maybe they got that low post scoring from West last year and that passing out of the post that they didn't quite get with Boone and that. I don't know. It'd be interesting. It'd be really interesting to see where they go with that third spot. I think they'll wait on it for a long time.
Well, here's the interesting thing again. How good did Wesley make Boone look when he was at United?
Mm.
And if your answer to that is pretty good, then ask the next question. How responsible was Wesley for making Long look good at Breakers?
Really good question. A lot of people brought that. I mean, that's that is the question we're about to find out. And I'm going to go ahead and say quite a lot, because none of those guards made him look particularly good. being ruthless.
No.
Let's shift gears to Sydney. They've signed Casper Ware. I mean, that's probably... Is that going to be the biggest deal in the NBL? Have you had a guess at it?
I like that. I think that's a major upgrade. No offence intended for Jerome Randall, but Jerome Randall 2019 isn't Jerome Randall 2017. And that's what happens. You know, you get a little bit older, you just lose a little bit of a step, you become a little more vulnerable to injury, and you become a little less effective than the young guy that's got the same skill set and is coming behind you. And I think by going to Casper, who's a proven winner, and who does play defense,
big time.
You've definitely upgraded that position.
I mean, you would think, looking at across the league, I'd say Casper Ware is probably the of the existing talent in the NBL last year, is the best fit to Bogut at the point guard spot. I'm trying to think who else would be, and I think it's him.
And they will get along because of that. They will get along far better than say, Jerome and Bogut got along, where you could see at times in games, you didn't have to be a close confidant of the team. You could just see it in games. There were times where one was irritated with the other.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Looking at the smaller deals that have happened, Jervis to Cairns.
Well, you know, I think of this in two ways. I think if you're going to recruit players to try and build your program, taking them from a program like Perth is a smart move. That's got a culture. That's a culture championship, as Mitch Creek called it this week in an interview I did with him. Their championship that they just won was a culture championship. It was a reinforcement of Wildcats basketball, as they like to call it. So recruiting out of that crop, I think, is a smart move. However, who you recruit out of that crop is very important. And I think in the case of Lucas Walker, Lucas had sort of helped out around the fringes in their championship year. Then he had played as a power forward in the year. They got knocked out by the 36ers in the semis, and then he got recruited to Cairns. So I don't really consider him to have come from that. And then you've got Dexter Kearney-Strew, who has really yet to step up to being a top-tier player in the manner in which Todd Blanchfields and those sort of guys have already taken that step. Cam Glidden, he was expected to and didn't. And Jared Kenny basically is a solid player, but he was a backup to Damian Martin. Yeah. So the guys that they actually took from that culture program to help their own weren't necessarily elite. Mm. And now we look at Tommy Jervis at the tail end of his career. Yeah. I mean, his decision is go play for a lesser club or retire. So I'm not sure. I think it'll help their program, but I'm not sure how much.
Yeah, no, I agree. And looking at their team, I mean, they've got so few players on paper to this point. There's Jervis and then obviously Majok Deng and couple others, but yeah, you're right when you say it. Like, I often hear that when guys go, oh, he'll, you know, you see it in the NBA a lot where guys are like, oh, well, he'll bring NBA experience, and it's, you know, someone like Adam Morrison from the Lakers. It's like, well, he was there, I suppose, but it's not.
Yes,
it's not
so. We had that a long time ago here with the 36ers when they recruited Orlando Phillips from the quote Los Angeles Lakers unquote, and that was back in the 80s at a time when we couldn't follow what was going on over there with the anywhere near the intimacy that we can now. And so you could come here and say, oh, I was the last cut of the Boston Celtics, or I was this or I was that, and we would believe it. And so that was the year that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar brought out his travelling Daydels to play the Boomers, and young guys like Luke Longley and Mark Bradke and those sorts of guys were playing in that. And I happened to be lucky enough to go up to Brisbane when the Daydels were playing the Boomers, I think on the Friday, and then on the Saturday the 36ers were playing Brisbane. And so the paper sent me up to cover both. And it was funny because all the 36ers boys were there watching the Kareem's team play against the Boomers, and then they all said at the end of the game, they were all saying to Orlando, come on, go down there and say good day to Kareem. You know, say hello to Kareem. He's your mate from the Lakers. Go on. And Orlando was all, oh, no. You know, I was sort of down the end of the bench. No, he wouldn't remember me. Or suddenly he backtracked at a million miles per hour. So, yeah, saying you're an NBA player or being an NBA player that sits deep in a bench doesn't really qualify you as being necessarily a star in another competition, and just quickly, in the same way as when people say, oh, we've got a lot of Australian players playing in the NBA. Yes, we have, and we've got the more important part from an Olympic and a World Cup point of view from the Boomers is that they're being significant. You know, Baines, Ingles, Simmons, Bogut, these are significant players for their clubs, whereas there's a lot of other countries that have got players playing and say, oh, we've got six NBA players.
Be the one I jumped to.
There are guys that are just sort of sitting deep in benches and say, okay, you're playing NBA, but you're not. It's not going to be quite the same as when you meet the Aussies.
I agree. quickly on Cairns, I mean, you saw how obviously Trimble's left, and you may have seen a few articles flying around that sort of a two-part question. One, the sort of journalistic integrity of those. Like, I felt a lot of them were just a little bit leery for the sake of grabbing attention and sort of, oh, Cairns are in financial trouble, when really that wasn't the case, and Cairns have come out since and said not so much. And then also just their dismay at being poached of talent. Do you think the Trimble loss was purely financial?
Of course. Yeah. And that's what happens. Torrey Craig, you can just keep going through them. You know, there's heaps of them that have started there and then ended up somewhere else. Cairns has been very good, even prior to Mike Kelly, obviously, with Aaron Fearn, in identifying talent. They've been really good at that, and therefore being able to get talent at a price that they can afford. And then when that talent shows just how talented it is in the competition, they're either gone, Scotty Wilbekin, good example, either gone to Europe, or they're heading over to Brisbane or other clubs here that are prepared to offer them more.
Do you think there's any way to combat that?
No, there really isn't. It's just the law of the jungle, and it's always been that way. Small market teams have a lot of difficulty hanging on to guys that aren't that are professionals. Your window to earn as a professional athlete is small. Yeah, so it doesn't matter how much you love the place, how much you may have loved Wollongong and want to play for Illawarra, or how much you might love North Queensland and want to play for Cairns. Mm-hmm. If the difference is 50 grand, you're out of there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And it's but I'm sure that Milo Trimble loved his time at the Taipans, really enjoyed living up there, everything about it. But it's purely a money decision, ultimately. And Melbourne, Sydney, Perth are always going to have the edge over everybody else.
There's been talk of sort of Queensland amalgamating into a team that's, you know,
I read that.
Meets Townsville.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that?
Look, I think for outsiders like us, it looks like an obvious and clever suggestion that would work. But for people that are there, they don't feel the same. It's the same as when the Southern Huskies came up with this great idea for a united Tasmanian team that represents Tasmania. And it's the first time that anyone's actually put their finger on it and thought this would work. Because generally, when you look back through the NBL history, we've had a team from Hobart, we've had a team from Launceston, we've had a team from Devonport. We've often had them at the same time. And you sort of go, well, if they had merged, how good would they have been? They can't merge. They hate each other.
Yeah.
They hate each other. These are sporting rivalries in the football and in everything else that goes back an eternity. And while on the outside we go, oh, gee, Tassie, if they could put together a state team, they'd be good. Yeah, and so now, go back to your original question, and Cairns and Townsville, that's one of the great rivalries. You want them all to sit in the same locker room and all be on the same page. Good luck with that.
And I think I also heard an interview with Bob Turner where he was like, well, all of a sudden you're playing half your game somewhere else. You kind of dilute your fan base. He didn't like the idea of it either. I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I kind of agree with him there. I was like, well, they are two separate places and two separate fans, and all of a sudden you've got some fans sitting around twiddling their thumbs waiting for a game. Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know how it works.
Here's how it works. You find a point exactly in between Cairns and Townsville, and you build a 7,000-seat entertainment centre there. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just there's no way.
Sean Bruce has gone over to Sydney from Adelaide. Do you think that was a monetary thing, or he's a good fit there, or they lost Wilson and went for it?
I think it's probably all of the above. I think also you've got to add a couple other things, and there's a great deal of instability in the Adelaide program right now. There's no announcements, and Joey Wright and I are friends on Facebook. Every day I see a new picture from Joey enjoying himself in South America. Here's a picture of me in Rio. Here's a picture of me in Peru. Here's what I'm doing today. It's not like he's out there on the hustings sort of thing trying to recruit players. Doesn't look like it. And they keep saying, well, we've got six players signed. Well, one of those six is Harry Froling, who's declared for the draft, and yeah, would be very doubtful because, I mean, the only scenario in which I see him playing for the 36ers is if he's drafted and they say, well, he needs a little bit more seasoning, and instead of the NBA team saying, well, he should go play in Europe as they did to Jonah Bolden, they say, okay, you can have another year at Adelaide. That's the only way I see him here. Otherwise, if he gets drafted, and they say, look, we want you playing in our G League affiliate or whatever, it's goodbye. So then you're down to five players. Now, Jacob Wiley's playing overseas at the moment, and he had to be released to do that. So if he's looking back in this situation and seeing it looking a little bit sick, he could technically not come back. And by the same token, the club could look at the team and go, do we need a Jacob Wiley now? We signed him for an extra year, but we had to release him to do this. Do we bring him back? So there's still some machinations to play out. If I'm Adelaide, what I do is I go hammer and tongs after Cam Bairstow and Nate Jawai, knowing that both of them have got an enormous upsides, but also are extremely erratic. And under a Joey Wright, you know, you might be able to get two-thirds of a good season out of both of them, and hopefully that would cross over sufficiently. And now you've got Daniel Johnson being effective because he's got two other big bodies around. This is, of course, factoring in that Harry's not there. So that's what I would be doing. And then I would be bringing in an absolute gun of a point guard. I mean, it was Joey who found Jerome, and then Jerome led to Casper, led to Mello, led to a bunch of other great guards coming in. So there are others out there.
Yep, definitely.
So that fixes the Adelaide program very quickly.
Staying with Adelaide, Big Joe's no longer there. I don't know how to pronounce his surname. I'm going to have a go at it. Zadzikian, is that right?
Yeah, I just try to read it along as I see it, which would be Tzatzikian. Yeah, Tzatzikian. Big Joe.
Okay. Will he be missed?
Well, I think I think what's interesting about that is he was made redundant, his position. Now, bear in mind, when they were playing at the Titanium Security Arena, he's a big part of setting up game night, etc., taking things down, putting things, all that sort of stuff. Now that they've moved to the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, it's quite possible that his position is no longer required, so they made him redundant. Now, that's fair enough. They've done that. Now, recently, they've advertised.
I had seen this, yes.
Yeah, it's like, well, hang on a second. You can't make a guy redundant and then advertise a position that's very, very similar to the position you made redundant. So if he wanted to be a bit of a gnarly departure, I think he could have some grounds to sort of take them to court. That's what I'm thinking. Now, I also think that there was a lot of pressure on the coach being put in the back rooms. And I think because Big Joe and Joey Wright are very close friends, maybe moving him on further isolates Joey. And,
can be done, straighten ups, fly right.
Yeah, or no, it's just like, you know, your support group is disappearing, so maybe it's time for you to disappear. So I don't know this for a fact. I'm putting pieces together that when you sign a coach 2 years ago for 5 years, and then 2 years into that, there's noises being made about, oh, you know, Nathan Sobey's left and this guy's left and that guy's left and Joey seems to still be here, but good guys are leaving. And you try to sort of pin that on Joey and sort of go, okay, maybe we need to get rid of Joey. Oh, we can't, because if we fire him, we've got to pay him out 3 years. So maybe we make the position untenable and he walks. And I'm not saying that's going on, but it does. You could look at it and go, wow, that is a conclusion.
An alien would come down from outer space and look at some of those moves and come to a similar sort of conclusion. Kyle Adam has moved on, Southeast Melbourne. Good move for him in what way?
Well, because he's from Melbourne. I'm trying to remember the club he played for in Seabourg, because I know Joey recruited him here to Adelaide. That was sort of like the beginning of his NBL, and he was sort of a development player here. And then from here he went to the Hawks for a while and then down to United.
Yeah, where, this is something like his sixth team in 7 years or something like that.
Well, every player needs a coach to believe in him.
Yeah.
And that's the secret to your success. You find that coach that believes in you. And Dean Demopoulos, I thought, spent 2 years with Melbourne United marking time and going backwards. However, the one thing Dean did do was look at Kyle Adenham and go, I like this kid, I'm going to play this kid. Mm-hmm. And because he did, Kyle Adenham was able to elevate to the position where he is a good NBL player, a good solid NBL player.
I thought he had a really good year last year.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the one thing you can thank Dean Demopoulos for, because the following year when Dean Vickerman came in, I thought there was a shift. I thought Dean Vickerman liked Peter Hooley. And so he believed in Peter Hooley coming, and Kyle Adenham's minutes disappeared, making Kyle's decision to go to Sydney a good one. And just as that, I see his decision to come home to Melbourne, play for the new franchise, be part of something new and exciting. Yeah, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Speaking of it, Dane Pinnell's gone there as well. Good move for him.
Yep. I mean, well, his dad was a Melbourne Tiger and played there. So, yeah, again, he's a Melbourne guy. So, yeah, all that sort of stuff makes sense. And they've really got to bring in some good Australian talent, because I'm fairly convinced, after talking to Mitch Creek last week, that Mitch, he'll be in the NBA.
Yeah, well, that's the strong impression I'm getting from a number of people, that he's going to stay there. My understanding is, though, and I could be wrong, so I'll ask you a clarification, but is that Mitch Creek now, he cannot go back. He has to go back on a full contract. He can't do the whole G League 10-day circus that he did last year. Is that right?
I don't know that for a fact. I know that he's going back in. He's going in 4 weeks' time. He's going back into Minnesota. They wanted him to come in early, so they want to work with him. And that's a fairly positive situation to be going into. But he said to me, he doesn't know where he'll be in the NBA. Like he has no contract at the moment, but he's confident in his ability. Yeah, to secure one. And there's enough people now that are aware of him and of what he brings. So, like, there are programs that he would fit nicely into as a role player, which is always going to be in the NBA. But, hey, I mean, that's something that you and I have. Yeah, yeah.
The minimum salary in the NBA is about the soft salary cap of the NBL.
Yeah, there you go. So he'd be a nice fit for a team like Spurs. Yeah. that like to move the ball, play team ball. Any team you can nominate that plays more team ball than not, he would be a nice fit.
And
doesn't
have a second round pick. Like Oklahoma don't have a second round pick this year. Maybe they look at some. I don't know.
Well, they got some thinking to do, don't they? Oh. I mean, they really have some thinking to do.
Yeah, that was gut-wrenching. But more than the shot, forget the shot. We all saw that. That was incredible. But it was the sort of losing a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter. Just slow bleed out to leading to that massive shot. Yeah, they got a lot to think about.
I don't know what to make of him. You know, like I look at a young man like Steve Adams who has really gone.
Frustration levels were through the roof.
Yeah, and he had sort of developed to a certain point. And then I look at Terence Ferguson, who we know personally from here, and he's come along nicely, but they make some interesting decisions. Like, you go back a few years when Durant was still there and Harden was there, and Harden didn't want that much more to stay, and now, you know, from that group, Ibaka's gone, so, you know, like, I don't know what to do for that program, because you sort of wonder whether, well, maybe they should move Westbrook on and see what they can get for that,
$40 million a year. I think what you're more than likely to see is they go with their big guys and they trade Adams, and he's got a huge contract at 20 some million, and I think they try and get a bit of pieces that might work better for him. Totally, yeah. You know, I think that'd be a bad move, but I think that's the way they're going to look at the situation. Unless you take Westbrook, I've always thought they needed a point guard, an actual, you know, real high IQ point guard, and just let Westbrook come off picks and be a danger man. But they don't seem to want to do that. Or he doesn't seem to want to do that.
I think he needed the ball in his hands too much.
Yeah.
And so that's why he wouldn't want to. He wouldn't do that.
Do you enjoy watching him play?
Oh, no. I enjoy the intensity at which he plays that, and I enjoy the skills that he's got. But I think his decision making sometimes it just leaves you shaking your head, and you go, "Come on, man, you can do better than that."
Let's go back to the NBL. Craig Moller to Sydney. I was really surprised by this from both player and team to an extent. What do you think?
I don't know what prompted that move. Now, maybe Melbourne were not offering him quite as much. He made it into the Boomers by playing for United. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it was the Boomers' C team, but yeah. but you know, he's still got to wear the green and gold, and he's got that forever, and more power to him. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe see the thing that I tend to sort of look back on is Will Weaver as a Boomers assistant coach. Has he had anything to do with a lot of these guys in the national program that have then gone? You know what? I like him. I like the sound of him. I wouldn't mind playing for him. Now he's coaching the Kings, and you go, all right. This is what I can get in Melbourne. This is what I can get in Sydney. I've already lived in Sydney for a year. I can. You know, I like it. And maybe the coach is what is making the difference there. And I mean, that's with no slight on Rob Beveridge, who I thought was an absolute monty to get that job.
I still can't believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
And also just from the way he went about things, like, you know, he's, thanks, Illawarra, goodbye. Very few people leave a job without something in line, and it just seemed to fit. And, yeah, that's a unique situation. I think that might sort of, some secrets might come to the fore about that whole situation.
Yeah. I don't know, there was an ownership change, though, Joe, and often with new owners, new CEOs, everybody wants to put their own imprint on. So,
you know. Did you see that all the, I think, the owner of the Kings, Will Weaver, they're all in Golden State right now with the Warriors? Did you see that?
No, I didn't notice that.
They're over there and chatting with Steve Kerr and obviously Bogut and kind of working on what they do.
Yeah, well, that's a smart move, isn't it? That is a real smart move.
Yeah, they're aligning with that. Sort of like a pseudo sister clubs almost, the way those two
are. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm looking at the free agent board. I mean, here's the local talent that's still remaining. This is what I pick to be sort of the top five still left. You've got Nate Jawai, who's been linked to Perth. Do you think that's likely?
Well, they will. I don't know what direction they're going to go because they've obviously Cotton's going to be holding down one import spot. That's re-signed, sealed, delivered, etc. I thought that it looked very much to me like Trevor Gleeson and Tirico White was a good matchup. Like I thought Trevor got him to where he needed him to be and was really happy for him. The way he played in the final series, I could see on Trevor that he was proud of the young man. So. I think that, you know, they'd be tempted to bring him back if he wanted to come back. So now you're going, all right, what do we need to keep going forward? And you probably need a big.
And you know, he's probably the best on the board, Nate Jawai, I mean.
But they've still got they've still got the option of a third import, so they could go and import big.
Are they allowed three imports?
they shouldn't be. No. Damn it, they've won 9 championships. They should be allowed one import, for God's sake.
Tirico White, I think, might be a bit of a basketball merc. And I think he moves with the game. I know that he played in Korea, and they've expanded their import rules. I haven't looked into it specifically. Yeah. But maybe it's more money, maybe it's whatever. But I think he enjoys...
It would be more money, for sure. Money,
yeah. And he would enjoy travelling with the game, was the impression not that I met him, but I just got that impression.
No. I've got the same one. I've got the same impression, yeah.
Staying with the locals, I've got next up is Cam Bairstow. You said Adelaide might make a push in him. I think that.
No, I'm just saying I think like from the outside looking, I reckon I would, if I was Adelaide, I would be bringing both of those guys in and giving them their chance, saying, all right, here's a chance to put. I mean, Bairstow wants to go to the Tokyo Olympics, so he wants to have a great season. And Joey's the man to sort of do that for guys. If you want to play NBA or you want to get to the national program, Joey's your path. I mean, the only person that's struggled to do that has been Daniel Johnson, but he got there eventually. And so, like, for Jawai and for Bairstow to come to Adelaide
with a coach and put a between them and go, hey, good, you know, good luck. No, play it sounds like it's okay. You know,
I'm not sure Nate Jawai is going to be too thrilled with that particular analogy.
Only enough for one of them, and they've got to fight for it. It's a good situation.
But then you add DJ, and that becomes a nice little rotation there, and you haven't burnt an import spot because I mean they're committed to Ramon Moore and Wiley, but as I say there is a loop on the wall, and my info is that he's not all of that excited about coming back now if Harry's suspect and you know there's some things going on that maybe some of the players aren't too thrilled about, so there's that, but I don't know any of that for a fact. I'm just saying that's what they should perhaps be looking at.
David Anderson, has he still got a productive year in him? He'd be 40.
Yeah, well I know Joey Wright loves him. I know Joey is very keen to get someone in the locker room that will keep players in order. You know, I think Joey really rates that highly. I mean, personally, this is a philosophical difference I have with him. I think as a coach, you're responsible for what goes on in the locker room. But I guess coming from an American system, he wants to have players also holding players accountable. And David will do that. How much David can still produce on a weekly basis, you know, that shrinks every year. But if you're still getting... It depends what you're going to pay for him. If you're going to get 10 to 15 minutes and you're paying him a reasonable amount of money, then I think it works. But if you're going to get 10 to 15 minutes and you're paying him a bucket load, then I think it's a dumb move.
Let's jump over to imports. Lamar Patterson is the only person in the NBL first team not to be signed up. Brisbane obviously made a lot of moves. Sobey obviously highlighting that. Do you get the impression he's coming back?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a few teams stacking up. Did you not mention earlier that Melbourne United...
This rumour.
Yeah, that they're looking at DJ Kennedy as a 3-4. Well, how about Lamar Patterson as a 3-4? That'd be handy.
It would be amazing, I think.
Yes, I think then you can start sort of penciling in that they'll be around in the deep side of the playoffs. Yeah. He was surprising quality. Given the when he arrived, the story of his dog and having to send his dog Kobe home, and
there was all like, woes.
Yeah, and then he was a little bit chubby when he got in too, and you kind of looked at him and thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. It turns out to be the most all-round, consistent, versatile player that they've had since Leroy Loggins. I mean, you can't compare the two because Leroy is a triple champion, is a superstar.
The mold.
But yes, yeah, and it's like I certainly didn't think that the first time they came into Adelaide with him, because he only just arrived and he must have stopped by Krispy Kremes on the way to the stadium.
He was heavy.
Yeah, he didn't do much at all, and that was the night that Cam Glidden hit the three that won the game for him. And I sort of thought, oh, I'm not convinced by Brisbane. And then over the next few weeks, the turnaround was quite amazing, quite dramatic and amazing. And I take my hat off to him. He was very, very impressive. Loved him. Loved his game. So when you say he hasn't signed in Brisbane, do we see him back? Yeah, do we see him in Brisbane? You know, does someone else jump into that particular mix?
He's NBL All First Team. I think everyone would be taking a look at him for sure. And be wise to... I haven't heard anything. He's just the one who's, he's the NBL first team, and he's the one guy who I haven't really heard much talk about. You know, I've heard a lot about, Randall might go here, here, and here, and maybe the quiet is because something's, I don't know, it's all speculation. Perth have been.
I don't know about Randall either. I'm not convinced.
That sort of noise from an agent is like, ooh, they're interested.
Yes.
So are they?
Yeah. Yeah, because I've heard a lot of connection of Randall to Adelaide
and Brisbane.
Well, back up. See, the Adelaide part, that isn't... I'm pretty sure that isn't true. And Brisbane, why on earth would Brisbane take Randall when they've just taken Sobey, where they've still got Cam Glidden, they've still got Jason Kadee, and they're probably keeping a close eye on Jeremy Kendall as a prospect. So where does Randall fit in there?
I mean, they were saying... I heard somewhere that, they run this flow offence that's sort of three guards. It sounded... I don't know. It's a lot of guards. It's a lot of money to sink into one or two positions.
Well, I just saw a recent piece where Nathan Sobey was saying one of the reasons he wanted to go to Brisbane was to be the point guard, to be really developed as a point guard by Andre and also by CJ Bruton, one of our greatest point guards. And so now, if he's going to need to be a point guard, you're bringing in Jerome Randall, that's not happening.
It's not going to work. No.
That ain't going to happen. So a lot of this stuff is just point. Yeah, it's just white noise that happens in the off season.
Let's look at here. Perth have been very quiet, just in their usual sort of way that they carry themselves, very, very just straight backed and whisper quiet. What do you think they're doing?
I think they're like a duck.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They're just floating along the water, and you're thinking, oh, that's going on, and really all the activity is happening below the surface. They've quietly, but I mean, it's not like they haven't made any statements, but they've just sort of announced who's back, and you got Damo, and you got the core of the culture club back. You got Bryce back. You've got all the pieces that you'd want to have back, and now it's a matter of where do we go with the three man? Do we go back to White? Where do we go with the five man? Do we go back to Nate Jawai? Do we go to a Sean Long type, an import? Yeah, so they've got no pressure.
Yeah, they're doing the homework.
Yeah, they can sit back and relax, and they can pick someone off late in the piece. You know, the urgency to sign your players, it's more about signing your local content. Yeah. Well, your imports, you could just sit back for ages.
Wait forever and see what other options they get. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, the local talent, I mean, as I said, my top border had Jawai, Besto, David Anderson, Venky Joyce, Lucas Walker, Majok, and Peter Hooley. Outside of that, there's not a heck of a lot of talent that, you know, really jumps off the page. Even in that list, this year.
Well, Venky's probably one of the few that potentially,
I think so too,
make an immediate difference to somebody, could really help someone straight away. And by saying that, I exclude Anderson, Bairstow, and Jawai, who are obviously seasoned campaigners, yeah, who you know what are going to bring. But from the rest of that pack, he's the one that jumps out as potentially someone who could do something.
Yeah, for sure.
Immediately, and I'm kind of surprised that United haven't re-signed him, or that Phoenix haven't jumped on him.
The Phoenix, in fact, what also surprises me is the fact that Phoenix have gone after a number of guys at his position. You know, obviously, yeah, Wesley and Dan Trist, and now Pinnell. So they've kind of, you know, they've probably got a spot for him there, I suppose. But it's not great, attractive spot for him. So it suggests to me that he's not an option there. And then Melbourne have obviously just got United. Pardon me, have just got Long, which doesn't really exclude Venky so much, but they have re-signed Barlow, so maybe they split those minutes between the two. Very interesting to see what's going to happen to him.
It still takes you back to what we spoke about earlier. Like, how responsible is Ty Wesley for making Josh Boone a star and making Sean Long a star? You know, you can't underestimate Ty. He brings more than you see sometimes. Just little things, little touches, little moments, the right pass, the right time. Yeah. I've been a big rat for him from the moment he came in the league, when basically...
He's clever.
Yeah, when he came in, though, he was just merciless from the block. You played him high side, he drop stepped. You played him down, he rolled into the... He was just awesome. But over the years, he's added so much more to his game now, and he's still got a few good years in him, and that was a real smart signing by the Phoenix.
Who knows? Maybe with Ty Wesley helping, maybe Dane Pinnell will actually win the Defensive Player of the Year this time around.
It's not impossible, but I would not put any money on it.
No. Let's jump to something else. The Nielsen ratings have come out. There's a big survey for the NBL. Don't know if you've seen it or not. And it's a whole bunch of, you know, questions. What did you enjoy? What didn't? One question, though, caught me, and I thought I'd get your input on it. And I'll read you the question. It goes, in 25 words or less, if you could implement one change to the 19-20 NBL season, what would it be and why?
To the season, or to at any aspect?
Just, yeah, it was very open-ended, so I guess any aspect, okay, as far as presentation or what have you?
No, 48 minutes.
Oh, why do you say that?
Because I just think it's more value for money. And I think the fans love it. I think they want it. I think we went away with it because I went away from it only because Basketball Australia was briefly in charge of the NBL, and Basketball Australia wanted to keep FIBA happy, so it wanted to put us back into the FIBA camp of 40-minute games. And I think one of the reasons that the current ownership of the NBL has said it doesn't want to go 48 minutes is because the 40-minute game fits nicely into a two-hour television package. However, Joe, you know they're doing the preamble and they're doing the posts. So, and a lot of that is junk. It's just a waste of your time.
Yeah,
and so if we're going to add an extra half hour of BS on both ends of the game,
why not make a game?
Just go 48 minutes.
Interesting. I must admit, when you say about the junk, I'm like, oh yeah, actually that does make sense. But I do like I like things that are short, sharp, quick. 40 minutes, we're in, we're out. 2 hours, you never know. You know, it's never gone over 2 hours. I don't know.
You want a 48-minute game that goes quadruple overtime, like Melbourne versus Illawarra?
Yeah,
that would cause a few issues.
The NBL, when you get it, it's snappy. It starts on time. It feels good. NBA games, I like them very much. But holy jeez, you're surrendering your whole afternoon. It's crazy.
You can afford to. You're a young person. It's me that can't afford to watch three NBA games in a row. Jesus.
Let's go to something else. In the week, I watched a really amazing documentary. I thought this was seriously one of the best sports documentaries I've seen in a long time. Titletown, about the 36s and the 90s that you feature in. Who was the director on that? Because he also does Cardboard Addicts.
Yeah, Lennon Cooper. He was he started at Channel 10 as a cameraman. He was taken by Fox and was one of Fox's best cameramen slash producers. Mm-hmm. They used to fly him. He's Adelaide based. They used to fly him to the U.S. Open. They took him and Tom Wilson, not Sydney Kings ex Tom Wilson, but the Fox commentator Tom Wilson mm-hmm. to the NBA Championship Series when it was Cleveland with Matthew Dellavedova versus Golden State with Andrew Bogut. So they follow that. Like he's one of their top men. And unfortunately, in the world in which we live, as we see many of the established news gathering organisations trimming their staff, you know, he had the option, I think, of moving to Sydney because they didn't want to lose him or be made redundant in Adelaide. And so then he started up Flix Productions, and he's doing more work than he can handle because he's brilliant at what he does. So he did two documentaries. He planned to do three documentaries about the 36ers. One was the Golden Era, which was the 80s, and then the follow-up was Titletown, and then there was going to be a third one based on from 2000 to 2010, I think.
What would you call that? Golden Era, Titletown?
I don't know. He had a working title for it, but in the end, there wasn't enough good times. It was the 2002. The whole thing would have really been a focus on the 2002 championship, which was probably Adelaide's most amazing, where they've come from fourth position, and circumstances in the finals have made them the top seed during the course of the first round and semi-finals, and they get the home court advantage. It was a real freaky thing with, I think, Victoria Titans going down. They had a bunch of injuries. I think Jason Smith was hurt. Maybe Chris Anstey was hurt. Mm-hmm. It was a weird playoff series where Melbourne, this is one of the ones where people say Melbourne Tigers underachieved during the Andrew Gaze, Leonard Copeland, Mark Bradkey period. This was definitely a year, 2002, they should have won the championship, mm-hmm. and they didn't even reach it. It was West Sydney versus Adelaide. But that's where it would run out. But yeah, so Lennon is terrific at what he does.
I mean, Titletown, I was watching it, because I watched a recent documentary that's probably my most hated sports documentary. It's called The Carter Effect, about Vince Carter in Toronto. And I don't know if you've seen that one. Have you seen it?
No, is that a 30 for 30?
No. It's an independent production. I don't know who's done it. But it features about, I'm going to say about three. It's a 45-minute documentary. It features about 5 minutes of basketball footage, maybe less. It's all about him and the shoes and the nightclubs and the this and that. There's no talk of games he played, moments in those games. Whereas Titletown is about 3/4 game footage and cut in a way that's exciting, and you relive it. And then you know, you got yourself and players coming in. I thought it was really brilliant. If I can tell you, it goes for 2 hours, and I watched the whole thing in one go. It was brilliant.
He's very good at what he does. He really is. He's among the best in the country.
Have you seen Cardboard Addicts? Haven't had the chance yet. I don't have.
Yes. Yeah. I was lucky enough. He sent me a copy of it before it ever aired, so I was able to review it before it aired.
Okay.
Again, it was the sort of thing where. To try and make, you know, trading cards, you know, and cards about, to make that interesting, boy, oh boy, that was a challenge. And yet he did it. He pulled it off.
Because, I mean, I went back to my old storage and I found a copy of The Australian Basketballer, and I saw my old cards there and I thought, wow, that was... I thought about taking them with me. I thought, no, I think I'll leave that in the past. I don't think that's a healthy habit to have at my advanced age.
I was just going to say that I get a lot of emails from people saying they found all their cards from the 90s. Are they worth anything? And unfortunately, the majority of cases, they're not.
Unless you've kept them in pristine condition. I can assure you I didn't. I've got... I don't know why, but as a youngster, I had a particular distaste for Clarence Weatherspoon. I saw three cards. All of them had texture all over his face. And so, I don't know why. I don't know why he hung them. Anyway, from Titletown.
There's no explanation for
that. No explanation for that. I mean, maybe his physique is just big and strong. From Titletown, I've got a few questions that are sort of like one or the other. Kind of like, it'll make sense when I ask him.
Okay.
Who was better at dropping F-bombs and flipping the bird, Ken Cole or Shane Heal when he did it to the crowd?
I think probably Shane, because he was more inclined to. Ken kind of saved that up,
yep.
And then just bang, yeah.
Can you tell me the circumstances of that? Because I'm not too familiar.
Of that particular incident that's in Title Town? Yeah. The funny thing about that is that that game wasn't on television. There was just a news crew there from whatever station to just catch, you know, they used to come out to games and they'd come out late in the game and they'd shoot about 10 minutes and they'd cut that into a 2-minute report and it would just play in the background while they said that, you know, Newcastle Falcons defeated the Canberra Cannons or whatever it was, you know. And so he's felt that they were hard done by the officials, as you could tell by the, what he said.
I got that impression,
but, but he saw that there was a camera crew there. He sought them out. He went over to them and said that for their benefit to go on air so that he could get fined and in trouble. But he would have made his point for the world to see. Is that they're the ones that should burn in hell?
Yeah.
Paraphrasing. That's politely paraphrasing.
Yeah, and so that was.
Was that? Were you at the game? Do you know of it?
No, I don't. It wasn't here. It was an interstate game, and it was a. It was quite amazing though that when you know the full set of circumstances that it wasn't a post game interview, and we weren't on TV with every game. He saw that crew there.
Flipping off the crowd. Of course, it's far. Of course, it's not in Adelaide. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
He seems a real character, and I'm going to give him the title for a better word. I'm sort of the Alan Bond of basketball. Is that how?
I don't know. I think Ken is fairly unique
in the way that you only meet one. You know how Kerry Packer said you only meet one Alan Bond in your life, and I think even you, in the documentary yourself, said you only meet one Ken Cole. Very lucky to meet one.
Yep, and he's a unique character, and I've never met anyone with more passion and love and positivity about the game than Ken. But, you know, he's had a very controversial life as both a player and as a coach. He's never shied away from it. Very interesting character. Would make a good book, but it would be such a difficult book to write because there's so much mythology involved with him as well. Right. You know, that separating the truth from the fiction or the version of a story that's kind of got blown up. It would be a really hard book to write, but boy, would it be fun.
And speaking of King Cole, I actually caught up with a guy who you may know. He was in the Australian basketball. He was a cartoonist, and he did the hacks for the Australian basketballer. The guy's name is Al Rose. Really nice guy. I caught up with him and had a chat. And he was saying how in that era you kind of saw more characters. And I think it's a little bit overdone now to hear like, people don't say what they want and political correctness, blah, 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 which I don't really buy into so much. But do you think was Ken Cole just a... His persona, was it just an aberration, or
no? That's him. That's Ken. Yep. What you see is what you get, and there was a lot of that. There were a lot of people who had strong personalities. You know, there was Charlie Amott, who was a coach from Sydney, the late Charlie Amott. I think I don't know if he coached the Supersonics, but he was at one stage he was coaching. I think it was the Hobart Tassie Devils, and the 36ers were coming to town, and they were averaging about 120 a game at that stage. And he said, "We're going to hold them to 70," you know, which was an outlandish statement to make. And of course, hit the press big time. And then the question was asked of Ken Cole. Well, you know, Charlie says they're going to hold you to 70. He said, "Well, they probably will, but did you ask which half?" Yeah, and it's sort of like, but they could banter like this through the media, and we would love it. Yeah, yep. But Bob Turner was a character too, a different sort of character, but again, someone that had no difficulty attracting media and would say things that's the thing about basketball people in the era of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even 10 years ago, is that they would say something. Yeah. You know, if you asked them a question, they wouldn't give you the... Because of political correctness, because of fear, because of social media. If you say something now and somebody thinks it's slightly off colour or slightly, you know, not PC, you're going to get burned. And nobody wants to go on social media and see people trolling him and calling him names. And so there's a great deal of fear now that makes people just sort of pull back and just say whatever they think will pass. Yeah, that's exactly the word.
I mean, Bogut's probably the exception, but I've never really seen anything he said that's that outrageous, if I'll be honest with you. And also his delivery is very deadpan. This is
very dry, isn't it? Very dry.
It's not done in a way that attracts attention. It's almost always out of the side of the mouth and sly, which I enjoy, but it's not in the same vein as the guys we're talking about.
And he does enjoy people taking it the wrong way and jumping in. Yeah, he's sort of coming in, jumping off both feet at the same time to go at him. And he, I think he sits back and is very amused. But he's a strong person, and he's a strong personality, and he can handle it. And there are myriad people out in the world of celebrity and sport that can't handle it and shouldn't have to handle it. And so, yeah, we tend to see a whitewash of what people say now. And if someone says anything that's even remotely outlandish or of their beliefs, you know, the reaction is can be horrific.
Okay. I mean, I kind of feel like Roger Daltrey, like The Who. I kind of want to, like, defend the generation, you know, but it's getting hard.
It's just where we're at, and I find it difficult with newspapers too now, because I think they were very heavily reliant on press releases, and I don't want to say the words back in my day, but when we got press releases, you would read them and you'd go, okay, that's the club point of view. What's really going on here? And that's what you were paid to do. You were paid to sort of dig out the real story. Now, we saw a year or so ago Mitch Creek, all that go down, and the 36ers were taking the high ground, and yes, you know, we're happy to send him on. And really, there was a hell of a lot of junk going on.
Right.
And, you know, but they put out a press release, and that press release then gets parroted in the paper, gets parroted on television.
Nice.
And so we just moved further away from anyone actually saying anything dangerous or that might have a consequence, or it's sad.
Okay. Let's move on to something a little bit more uplifting. More muscular, stronger physique, Chris Blakemore or Andrew Vlahov?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go... Chris had the biggest chest...
I've ever seen,
yeah, on a man of his size.
Is it Utoff? Is that the guy for Sydney Kings?
Well, Utoff was just a man mountain. He was a big man. So that's what I'm saying, though. Like, Utoff was close to 7 foot. Chris Blakemore was more around 6'4".
Yeah.
So on a man his size, that's the biggest chest I've ever seen, whereas Vlahov was a big, strong man at 6'7". And when they got into it in Salt Lake City between the Boomers and USA, and Karl Malone was in there, and Vlahov stepped in, and Karl Malone, you know, you remember what he looked like, and that was at his time, in 96. He was a massive guy. He did not want to take Vlahov on.
I stand by that Vlahov would have creamed him. I've met Vlahov. I remember I had the great perspective of seeing him. I was very young. He came and visited my school. He went to Kent Street High School in Perth. And I remember looking at him when I was very young, and I just thought, this is the biggest person I've ever seen in my life. And I think he still is.
Yeah. The thing with him and Karl Malone is that Karl Malone is an NBA player, so he would have been all, you know...
Cupcake punches.
Exactly. The sissy, I look tough stuff, and Vlahov would have dropped him.
Oh, for sure.
And in any fight between the two, I would pick Vlahov, because Vlahov is... just would have won. So
to finalize that question, we're going with Chris Blakemore.
Andrew Vlahov.
Andrew Vlahov for strength, Blakemore because for the physique, the actual battle chest.
Yep.
That makes sense. All right, next question. Least convincing comb-over. You know where I'm going with this. Phil Smythe or Ralph Coates? Do you know Ralph Coates?
No, but it's going to have to be Phil Smythe because...
Well, wait until you see this one. Ralph Coates played for... Burnley and Tottenham Hotspur in the English Premier League in the 70s. Google it. We'll leave this one pending because his is pretty... It's as if he's got a carpet book, a book of carpet samples on the side of his head. It's pretty incredible. Flipped the wrong way.
Yeah, I was very pleased for Phil when he decided to do away with that.
And this is more of a philosophical question for him. What do you think was his motivation in keeping that? Was it a like, no, I don't think people can tell, or it's quite hard to stop? I've often wondered.
Yeah, it's that classic, I'm going to glance at that lady's cleavage and I think I'm getting away with it. She's looking at my eyes, but I think I'm getting away with it. Yes, it was like, I think people still think I have a full head of hair. And at some stage you look in the mirror and you go, no, I'm going to stop doing this now.
Yeah, for me, every 10 years, my hairline just recedes a fraction. I'm still doing okay. But at one point, I will just say, you know what? These things happen. And
it's done.
Take it on the chin.
take it on the chin where you can still grow a beard.
Exactly right. Next one, more unusual exit from the 36ers, Mark Bradkey or Mitch Creek? Let's go most unusual and least amicable.
Elise Amacon was Mitch Creek,
okay.
Because that, as long as this ownership and management stays in place, he will never have anything to do with the club again. So, whereas Mark Bradke would, because Mark was at the heart of his own decision.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mitch was more, I wouldn't say victim, but he was more or less responsible for what happened, whereas Mark
more
made
a litigation
yeah.
type thing.
Yeah, when you take out a Supreme Court injunction to prevent a player from going overseas to try out for the NBA, you're probably burning a bridge there.
Yeah, definitely. Mark, what do you think motivated Bradke to sort of... Because there was talk of him sitting out that year to transfer to Melbourne instead of going... was that a lifestyle thing? I don't know. Title Town touch.
It was like you saw in Title Town in 92 when he played his last game, during which he created his best numbers of his career. I think it was 43 points and some 20 plus rebounds or something. It was a monster game. And when he left the crowd, when he was subbed out, the crowd just gave him this massive, like the most massive outpouring of love. Yeah. Ovation. So when he then decided not to come back to that, it was a full 180 flip, and the crowd just turned on him. I haven't watched Title Town for a while, but I'm sure that 93 game is in there when he came back for the first time.
What he did? Oh, sorry. Go on, buddy.
No, I was going to say, what he was subjected to that night, I have never seen before or since. The crowd used to get on Shane Hill. Crowd here used to get on Brian Gorgian. The crowd was relentless on Brecky.
It's in the video and it's loud.
Yeah. He walked out. As they walked out from the change room to their warm-up, the crowd just turned on him. I mean, the crowd gave Chris Goulding a horrific time here in the semi-final a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Again, it was... I have never heard anything like that or seen anything like that. It was everybody. He didn't have a friend in there.
Wow. What he did that was great was he came back with this real thick, dark goatee.
Yeah.
Which is
he played the part of the villain.
It's the ultimate portrayal of a villain. I was like, that's central casting. That's brilliant.
It could not have been better. He didn't need the black hat. He had that. Yeah, you spotted it. It was great. It was theatre and it was basketball, and it was a tremendous game too, because Don Monson, who was coaching the Sixers that year, he threw in a triangle and two defense, mm-hmm. which was enormous, because the previous game they'd lost at home to Townsville, which was Townsville's first road win as a club in the NBL, and they were 10 points up at three-quarter time and lost it. So in Melbourne, who was going to go on and win the championship coming in, there was real fear we were going to be humiliated. He's done this triangle and two with Andrew Gaze and Leonard Copeland being marked by mm-hmm. by defenders and the other guys playing. And Melbourne struggled against it all night. It was a terrific day of theatre and drama, and one that would never be forgotten by any 36ers fan.
No, it's in Title Town. It's fantastic. Let's look here. Mike Dunlap. Most unusual sort of USA coach to Australia? Because he had highs, he had lows. He got on with some people. He got on very poorly with others. What do you think?
I think at that time, he was still young in terms of where he is now as a coach. And he was more familiar with the 18 to 22-year-old college students, right? So when he got here, they've sent over five or six players, I think Brett Maher, Brett Wheeler, Nathan Hawks, Tim Brenton, Chris Blakemore, and Matt Scousey, I think, were the six guys off the top of my head. They sent over the 36ers, rather than going on an end-of-season trip, sent those guys over to spend some time.
Just those guys.
Yeah, just the young guys. So already he had a connection to young guys. So when he comes in, and now you're confronted by Phil Smythe, who's done more in basketball than you have,
yeah.
Mark Davis, who's done more in basketball than you have, Mike McKay, Scott Ninnis, or all the other guys that were part of that program, I think there was a real split down the middle. He favoured the young guys. And again, he did things that players would have accepted if he'd done it the right way, in an Australian kind of context. And by the right way, I would have meant that when he inserted Brett Maher into the starting lineup and put Phil Smythe on the bench, Phil would have accepted that if Brett beat him out.
Right, yeah. It was done sort of like, well, it's a youth movement.
Yes. And so here we have the guy that is starting for Australia at point guard,
not starting
coming off the bench... behind a kid.
Unbelievable.
And so, yeah, so obviously there were things that weren't properly addressed. I mean, Robert Rose was an import here and a very strong character, one of the greatest players to lace up his boots in the NBL. And eventually he and Dunlap were butting heads too, you know. So,
because it was a great team, you know.
Yeah, it was.
Trimmingham and others. It was a great team.
Well, Trimmingham was a little later. But the really good team they had involved Rose and Phil and Andrew Svaldinas and a whole heap of guys. It was a terrific team that made it to the championship series when it probably shouldn't have. Mm.
Next question. Who came back from the more painful injury? Willis Reed, 1970, or Mark Davis from the dislocated shoulder, 1994?
I don't know how badly Willis Reed was injured, but he couldn't really play that. He just
thigh muscle.
Yeah, he just basically came out for that game, walked on, made 4 points, walked off, and it was the inspiration of it. Davis had his shoulder dislocated, tried to throw a baseball pass, and Dave Simmons tried to defend it, and bang, out it went. Yeah, and he was in serious pain.
Yeah,
and so that was.
Do you know the level of pain? Did you? I heard he was throwing up in the locker room, and
yes, yep,
all that's true.
Yep, yep, and he was in a real bad way, and that was in game one of the semifinal.
He came back for game three.
No, actually, it didn't go through. So the Sixers won that, and then they went into Melbourne, and Phil played out of his skull. Svaldinas played out of his skull, stepped up in Davis's absence, and they won it in two. And they never should have won it. That was a little bit of a coaching error by Lindsay Gaze, because the main guys weren't going that great. So he stuck in this kid called Chris Anstey. And Anstey, they'd never seen before, and he was just terrific and sort of got Melbourne back into the game in game two. They win game two, they win game three, it's over. Unfortunately for Melbourne, but very fortunately for Adelaide, Lindsay then, you know, sat Chris down and put the main guys back in, Bradkey and whatever, and they just weren't having that great a game and didn't pick up, and the Sixers were able to hold on and win. So now you've got, basically, Davis is injured in game one of the semi. It only goes two games, and then we're heading into the North Melbourne Championship Series, and he's back. He's back with a dislocated shoulder, which is normally a 6 to 8 week injury. He's back with painkillers. He comes off the bench, and he jogs up to the score table to check in, and the Titanium Security Arena, or Eclipse Powerhouse as it was then, just erupts. Wow. Just with the most incredible noise. He comes on the floor, he goes to the basket, and John Stelzer and Paul Rees
smack him.
They hit him as hard as they can. And Mark Davis gets up to go to the free throw line, and that was as close as you'll ever see a black man being white, because he was just about a ghost. They hit him that hard. And he got up, and he walked there, and he made his free throws. It's just, these are the sort of stories that I like. Yeah, and then you say, you mentioned earlier that we don't have the characters. Paul Rees is a character. Mark Davis was a character. These guys were just, the things they did on the court made you admire them for more than just basketball.
Yeah,
or dislike them, whatever the case may be.
And I think the total lack of thought of image. There's no thought of capture. Yep. There's no just totally genuine, totally organic, which is really nice.
None of that. I'm doing this for my brand.
Yeah.
No, I'm doing this because this is who I am.
Yeah, it came natural. 1995, Adelaide changed their colours to blue because they get a sponsorship with Pure Milk. Do you find that odd? I mean, for me, Adelaide has always been a very sort of red sort of colour, and then it goes to blue, but it's stuck with it, even though I think Pure Milk has dropped away.
A long time ago.
Colour.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure why they kept it. Obviously, you've already explained why they changed to it. But what they did do is they retained the state colours. So when it first began and they were red, mm-hmm. that was the state colours in everything, in football and in everything. That was the state colours. So red, yellow and blue. So then when they went to blue, they still incorporated the yellow and the red. So they kind of, even though they switched, they still had the state colours. And the alternate in that 2002 championship, which is a little bit beyond Title Town, but the alternate then was the Pure Milk had their blue milk carton was for regular milk, and then they had a golden carton for skim milk. And so the alternate was a gold uniform, and it was with red pinstripes, really sharp. God, they looked sharp in those days. And then they sort of have become this sort of dark blue version of themselves, and they've gone to a colour scheme that means nothing. And it's a shame because a couple of years ago when the Crows made the AFL grand final, you couldn't really drive anywhere in Adelaide where there wasn't a red, yellow and blue balloon on a shop front or on a gate, on a fence. So it was for the Sixers to have moved that far away from the state colours is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I agree. All right, here's one, and I'll cut it out if it comes across the wrong way. Rick Brunson. Brett Maher called him a snitch. Bonny, you called him a knob. Which is it? It made me laugh.
Well, you know, he's an interesting character when he was here because he, being American and being very much in the thrall of the coach, Mike Dunlap, because he'd missed out on the pros. He'd come out of Temple University. He hadn't, a lot of his teammates
Temple
had
University,
been drafted.
The alum, I think Bill Cosby went to Temple.
There you go. He was in good company. He hadn't made it, so I think he was thinking that this was going to be a springboard back in, and it was. Now, we talk about guys that come out here and then went back and played NBA. He had quite a long NBA career.
Yeah, long time.
And that's often forgotten. So when he was here, he was closer to the coaches who could help him than he was to these Australian teammates. So he would report back on anything that was being said. And, you know, I don't know how many teams you've been involved in, but players like to blow off some smoke and some steam when they're mad. That doesn't mean anything. Now, if you say, oh, the coach is a bit of a wombat for this, that and the other, I mean, you've blown off the steam, you feel okay, and on you go. But if someone's running back and telling the coach that, then the coach is sort of thinking, oh, okay, I've got to keep it on this guy. And it sours relationships. And that's what he managed to do, which makes him, in my book, a bit of a knob.
Yep.
But he was a bit of a knob because he was a snitch. So there's your answer.
Beautiful. Last one. 0.2 seconds. You can't take a dribble and a shot in that time, can you?
No, you cannot, unless you play for the Brisbane Bullets.
97. That, I mean, 0.4 is now Derek Fisher's debatable. There's no doubt that 0.2 is not possible to take a dribble. I don't think it's possible to take a chest pass and then drop it into the floor and have it come back up. I don't think that's possible.
However it is, if the person sitting on the score table is from Brisbane and doesn't actually push the button until the ball's left your hand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was probably the worst loss of Dave Claxton's time as coach of the 36ers because they had that game won. That was very smelly.
Do you think there'll be a revisionist history? Like, we've gone back and sort of, I think, Lindy Chamberlain has been sort of...
Exonerated.
Yeah. Do you think there'll be a time where we go, you know what, let's just change the record books for... Do the right.
No. What? This gives us the game's folklore, Joe. It gives us things to talk about. It's like the time that Coburg, or I'm sure if they're still Coburg Giants or whether North Melbourne, but they had beaten Illawarra at the Snake Pit. They had won, and there was apparently still a second to go on the clock when Bruce Palmer, as the coach, sort of jumped up and jumped on the court, and suddenly there's a tech foul, there's shots, and oh no, you didn't win the game. So there's the free throws that Damon Lowry shot at the end of the semi-final, game three for Illawarra against, as they were at Wollongong Hawks against the 36ers in this. Yeah, you know, you don't want to go back and change that, even though there was, you know, just quite a lot of things about that. There was anomalies about that all over the place, but it doesn't matter. It gives you your folklore. That would be, there was a year that Illawarra or Wollongong won the championships. I think it's 2001.
That makes sense. I think there was actually a thing on Twitter about that just earlier today. Yeah.
How about that? But yeah, so Damon makes three free throws and he's fouled as the siren goes or after the siren. There are timeouts allowed. There are all kinds of things. You're not allowed to line up. So if you're allowed a timeout, that means there must still be time in the game. Then you can line up around. And yeah, it's a weird one. But look, change it? Nah, don't go back and change anything. I think the one thing they should change is and this is just a pet of mine, is the final score of the game where North Melbourne beats Adelaide for the championship. I think it was game two. I think it was two straight. Game two, because on the siren, Robert Rose was fouled on a three-point shot. He goes to the foul line. He makes all three, but by then the streamers and the balloons are coming down. He makes all three free throws, and they've got him on the score sheet as two from two. and I watched him make all three because I had nothing but respect for this guy. He's got balloons and streamers falling all around him. He's lost the game. He's part of the losing. They're runners-up. They're going to get a trophy that he throws in the bin because he doesn't want a loser's trophy. Wow. He makes all three free throws. So instead of the final score being 94, it should have been 95. Pedantic, yeah. That's the one thing I'd go back and change because I think he deserves that.
All right. I'm going to look into that for sure. One thing, buddy. Alien comes down from outer space.
Okay.
And says, and they've got a team of five guys. And they're, let's say they're a team in the mould of this year's Sydney Kings, but good, but better.
Okay. So it's not Space Jam 3. Okay.
Not quite. And they say, we're playing for the planet. You've got one team, one Adelaide team, to fight for the planet from any decade. Which team you're choosing? Which year?
Oh, it's really hard for me to go past 86.
86.
Yeah, because that 86 team, 24-2, both losses on the siren. So like
Al Green's on that team.
Yeah, 6 seconds from a 26-0 season, which no one's ever going to do. That team was perfect. It was perfect in terms of every position. It gave you what you needed. So that Adelaide, that would be the Adelaide team I'd pick on. That's really, you look at those. 98, 99, Kevin Brooks, Daniel Mee, the stuff they were doing, Brett Maher. You go, wow. So just quickly, this Alien team, where, you know, like, what era are they from? Are they playing in the 80s?
They are, okay, they mould to the team that you choose. So if you choose a team from the 80s, they're going to be an 80s mould team. So
Adelaide will beat them. It might have to be a series, but Adelaide will win it.
I've got a theory. Al Green, I think, is he from South Bronx?
Yeah, he's from one of the New York boroughs.
He's got that higher pitched voice, and I find that and Mike Tyson has it as well. I find American guys who have that kind of tone are real strong, capable, kind of nasty, in a good way. You know, real tough. I think the lower the voice goes, they're the more jovial, funny characters.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe that's
interesting theory. Interesting theory, because if you spoke to Al now, as he's gotten older, his voice has matured. He couldn't do the Vienna Boys Choir anymore. He's far deeper and far more resonant. I don't know where Mike Tyson is. I'd like to hear him. Oh no, he's still quite in the Hangover. He was still quite high pitched. That's not that long ago.
They got that sort of softish tone. You know, I find that the softer spoken person is potentially they're pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's pretty much all I've got. Let me have a quick look here. Don't worry about that. Yeah, that's about it. Do you know Al Rose? I was mentioning before, he was a cartoonist. Didn't bump into
him? I'm Australian basketball was a long time ago, and I'm sure I knew him at the time because they had a couple of great photographers as well that I knew quite well at the time. But if you threw their names at me right now, it's like I probably won't be able to.
This issue I've got is from 1986, February, March.
Okay.
You have a guess how many articles you've gotten here?
Three?
Three on the nose, bang.
Yeah. Did he draw? That was just a wild guess. Is there a caricature of Leroy Loggins in that one?
No. The only thing that is in there is the Hacks, a little comic strip. How many of these Australian basketballs are there? Are they a quarterly magazine? Are there many?
No, they had a little bit of a run. I'm actually in my study at the moment. I can see them in my bookshelf. There was a heap of them. They went for a number of years. And they tried to be monthly, but every now and then, because of the circumstances, the writers were a bit ordinary and in terms of getting them in time. So sometimes it would be like a July-August issue where it had been a June issue sort of thing, May-June. Oh, July-August is one. Yeah. September-October is one. So it's not like 12 a year. It's a bit erratic, but there's a lot of them, and they were pretty good value. You had people with opinions saying plenty of things.
I'm going to go through this. I haven't really had a chance to commit to it. I haven't read a lot of it, but yeah, it's this great little section here on the NBA. And this is like how, as you said before, like how little of the NBA filtered out.
Yeah.
And there's a thing here, this year's meat market by Dave Kellogg, about, you know, who's good, who's bad, you know, good at any cost, Patrick Ewing at $1.25 million. Who's he got as a bust in the NBA? Let's have a look here. A tad too expensive, Joe Dumars.
long-term investment, Chris Marr. So, you know, this is all you had. Because I remember not being particularly internet savvy, and reading Pro Basketball Today was really the only outlet there. But what I will say about the Australian Basketball is beautiful design. I mean, this is a very old, and it's in beautiful condition. I haven't certainly, you know, kept it in any great condition. It's not shedding any pages. It's a thick plastic to the pages. It's a great little magazine.
Yeah. The editor was a gentleman by the name of Colby Nicholson, who came from magazine journalistic background, loved basketball, sought out what he thought or who he thought were the better writers around the country, and like Dave Kellogg was a terrific writer, actually very entertaining, you know, like a lot of humour in his stuff, and then he got these columnists. I mean, obviously like Ken Colbert, but a Bob Turner and Bill Palmer, Adrian Hurley, people who would actually say something. They wouldn't just, you know, like you read the columnists now in newspapers, the football columnists that are past players, and there's one or two that will try to be controversial for the sake of it.
And it's trite.
But, yeah, whereas these guys, they were just giving their opinions and opinions for the direction of the sport to go in this country, and it makes a great reading, and it makes a great historical reading to sort of see where we have ended up compared to where they thought we could.
And what's it like writing for a magazine? Like, what's the difference in sort of your style and how it comes about?
Well, it depends on whether it's a news story or whether it's a feature.
Right.
But generally speaking, they're usually features or wrap-ups of things that were going on. And so you just had more scope. It's a more relaxed sort of format. You don't have to go, well, here's the five facts I've got to get across in boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You could write with a bit more flair if you had it or you were trying to get it. So, yeah.
Let me see if I can bring this a bit closer and have a look at some of your opening lines on one that I read quickly. But yeah, I love the little cartoons in it as well. It's got a great graphic layout. It's a really nice little piece to hang on to.
Yep.
If you've got copies of it, that's fantastic.
I've got the whole set, and they had a folder that you could sort of file them in as well. It's good.
2 seconds here. Where is it? I've got three articles in here. I can't find one.
It's okay. I'm sure the listeners aren't that fussed.
Yeah, no, but as I said, brilliant little thing, and Al Rose was such a nice guy. Oh, here we go. Steve Johansson, the man who steered Sturt to the top of the mountain, is back at the base camp, ready to begin ascent. Another challenge, another shot at the impossible.
Okay, is that one that's got a picture of all these guys looking up at the ceiling?
It's him with a sort of camp of kids.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, he's throwing the ball between them.
Because sometimes they used to run photographs that were, say, unusual, and you could whack in a comedic caption, and that was always a bit of fun.
There's one. I like the letter to the editor at the back here. It's about a guy missing out on a slam dunk issue or something like that. Hang on, let me just find this. And it's a guy from Perth. 2 seconds. All right, here we go. Let me begin by saying that my letter is not directed to the Australian basketballer as so much as to the organisers of the dunking competition mentioned in the December-January issue. I was not only surprised but also angered when I read about the competition and found that not even a mention was made of Roland Brooks, the 203-centimetre forward from Perth. Do you know Roland Brooks?
Yeah, he was a good player. Wiry sort of player, yep.
It's obvious a genuine number of that Brooks is the best dunker in the history of the league. It goes on and on and on. And then it says, I'm interested to hear the organisers' reasons for this gross mistake. So if this letter is not published, could I at least receive a reply? If not, I can only assume that there is no satisfactory answer other than carelessness or contempt of Western Australia. Sincerely, Mark Walsh, 16 years old, from Greenmount, Perth.
You know what? I reckon within a couple of issues, the Australian Basketballer ran a picture of Roland Brooks throwing down a massive dunk, either in the insert in the middle of the you know, like a double page spread in the middle, or actually no, I think he was on the cover. Roland Brooks is on a cover, slamming down in his Perth uniform in game shot. It was a good picture within a couple of issues. Yeah,
I think with Perth, as much as things change, they stay the same. I read that and I thought, wow, that could be written in February, March of 1986, or yesterday.
Yep.
I'll end it there, but thanks very much. That was a lot of fun.
No worries at all, anytime.
I'm just going through the golden era, the other documentary.
I hope you enjoy that as much. That really is a phenomenal piece. That's what he won, and he won a bunch of awards for that
surprised.
One.
I'm not surprised. Yep. I've tried to get in touch with him and have a chat to him just about. When you're doing those pieces to camera, like, does he do all his own research, or does he come to you and ask how he should tell the story or whatever?
No, he's got the narrative worked out. He works out what he's going to put in from action. He has the most extensive library of 36ers/NBL in the country. Like, he's got every 36ers game that ever went to air on DVD, and he's converted a lot. Like, I had a bunch of games that were on video, which he's converted to DVD. His filing system is fantastic, and he's just able to access anything. So if you say, look, there's a game in '92, I think it was on television between the Newcastle and Adelaide, in which this, that, and the other happened, he'll just go find it and get to it. He's very clever, but he is totally responsible for everything that happens in those documentaries. We just sit there and answer a question that he's thrown at us, right. and that's pretty much it. He knows where he wants it to go.
And he seemed to ask most of his questions on sort of emotion, you know, what was it like to be there, or comment on the play that just happened, and then they chose. Yeah, it was really good. And if anyone's listening, you got to watch it.
My favourite bit, just quickly, is from the golden era, where it happened that West Adelaide and the Adelaide 36ers were going to merge, and West Adelaide had Al Green and Adelaide 36ers had Darryl Pearce, and they were sort of two of the giants of the game at the time. And Darryl's quoted as saying, it was going to be a difficult time for us, but, you know, it's not like, we were going to get along. Not like I hated him. Then he cuts to Al Green saying, I hated him.
Yeah. That is good. I have seen that good, bit of it.
Yeah,
so far.
Yeah. Such a good moment. Right. He's a very clever documentary maker and destined for huge things.
Sorry if he would divulge it. Because the standard of late has been poor, and this was exceptional.
He was a student of my wife's in high school.
Oh, get out of here. Oh, good.
Yeah. At that stage, he was writing articles and sending them to me to sort of see if they were any good. And he just went down that path, and then he found actually his eye for it. Once he became a cameraman, his eye was so good at capturing the right things. Some people just are natural for certain things, and he certainly was.
That documentary, natural is a good word, just flowed naturally and, really, really good. Did you ever consider TV work, buddy? Because I saw you on screen. I was like, okay, but you have a good presence and a good voice for it. Was calling games ever a thought, or, you know, more panel type?
No. Unfortunately, at that time when I was doing the courtside stuff, I was working for the afternoon newspaper, so I could do it. But when the afternoon newspaper ceased to exist, I was working for the morning newspaper, which meant I had to be taking notes during the game. Like, I couldn't do I had to file straight away as soon as the game was over for the paper. Right, and that was my primary source of income. So I couldn't say, well, look, you know, primary source of income, we'll put that to the side so I can have my noggin on television. Nah, couldn't work that way. Yeah. Whereas when I was working for the afternoon paper, I could do it because I didn't have to write the story till the next day.
Makes sense. But pleasure as always. I'll be in touch in the future, and I'm looking forward to the golden era.
Okay, no worries.
Cheers, bud. Ciao.
See ya.
Bye.